Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、
What's good, internet? It is December 26, 2016. We are coming to you on recording from the Brook House. The Brook House.
The Brook House.
The Brook House.
The Brook House.
Brooklyn. Vice HQ. We're actually recording this a few days before when you're hearing it.
Don't tell him the secret. I got everything I wanted for Christmas.
Is that the secret?
It's okay.
What did you get for Christmas?
World peace and Donald Trump's not the president.
I don't think you got either.
Wait a minute.
Let me have a Christmas wish.
I don't know that that's going to... I'm going to let you keep having your dream for now.
Let me dream beautiful and big.
We'll talk on the real 26th about whether or not that's true.
If you fall asleep and never wake up, then you don't have to experience it.
That's a good point. Good dark point.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Yay!
From your friends here at Waypoint. Keep your heads up.
Keep them up.
Everyone's happy.
Hey, dream big. I wanted to dream big.
Okay.
I'm coming at this with positivity.
Yeah, that's fair.
Dreaming big.
You gotta hold on to your dreams.
That's right.
Patrick Klepek, Daniel Riendo, you are both here.
Yeah.
I'm here also, and it is holiday time, which means that we are not, like I said, coming to you live. We are coming to you on recording, because we're all just going to, like, try to keep it easy this week.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the website has stopped updating. In fact, by the time you hear this, there should be a bunch of hashtag content on the website. We're doing something kind of cool, I think, for our end-of-year stuff. We're doing a school yearbook.
Yes!
Welcome to the Waypoint High School Class of 2016. We're giving out senior superlatives, things like tardiest and class clown and cutest couple. We're talking about the clubs of Waypoint High School.
Good extracurriculars, yeah.
There might be some fan fiction, some crossover
art.
Hell
yeah.
Welcome to Waypoint. This is how we do it. We do it by saying, what would happen if somebody from the division met someone from Call of Duty? That's a fiction that's coming up later this week by Robert Rath. And that, it sounds like a silly thing or like a bad thing, but it's actually so good.
It's a very good thing.
That was the last one I had my editing hands on. And it's really good. All of them have been really fantastic. There's some great art. I'm really happy we got to do our own personal lists. Those will be coming out throughout the week. We are going to be able to do a whole bunch of different things that let us talk about the year in games, both in terms of what we liked and just trends that we saw. Everything we'll be hitting this week from the year that there has been in shooters to kind of surprisingly good. And we asked one of our best freelancers, one of our favorite freelancers, to tackle that subject for us. To the rise of different sorts of fandoms, to there's a whole bunch of stuff. So make sure you go to waypoint.vice.com, aka waypoint.zone, aka bazinga.zone, aka digitalpyramids.com, to check out all the different stuff we do this week. We'll also probably try to do a couple of streams throughout the week.
Yeah.
Again, we're pretty much working from home. We're trying to actually rest and recover. I got a lot of emails
play
to go
some
through.
Games.
So play some games.
Some of that too.
So real talk, a lot of what I'll be doing this week is playing games so I can finish my top 10 list.
Because
there's a lot on that list there's a lot of games that people loved this year that I didn't get a chance to play.
Yeah.
And so I'm gonna try those before my list goes final.
Uh-huh. Sure you are.
What are you two going to be up to this week?
I'm going to play with my pets, and I'm going to play a lot of games as well. I'm going to hang out in Rhode Island.
Rhode Island? Okay. Oh, so you're going to be up in Rhode Island.
I'm going to be up in Rhode Island for a little bit.
Excuse me, sorry. Oh, wow.
At the moment.
You're up in Rhode Island right now.
Yeah, it's real snowy up here.
Wow.
It's real cold 200 miles to the northeast.
Great.
No, it'll be fun. It'll be nice to chill out. I'm going to spend some time with my girlfriend, my family, and yes, we are going to play a lot of games.
Awesome.
That'll be nice.
How about you, Patrick?
Considering this is my daughter's first Christmas, it'll be a lot of parading her around to.
Right. Sure.
I will probably get precious little time to myself. It will be a lot of just getting her around from place to place every day.
Aww.
So hopefully I'll get some time to play some games. But maybe. You know.
I love games, but like that doesn't mean that that's the only thing you should be doing with your time off. That's your job, Patrick.
Yeah.
Let yourself have.
No, my job is shepherding this baby around for a week.
Oh, right, fair.
That's your other job.
Right. Well, you know, I mentioned that one of the things I'll be doing on my time off is
answering emails,
catching up on emails. I feel like maybe that's the thing I always say.
You
is
do
like,
a live really, stream of your emails?
Oh man,
maybe we can do that. But what
that might be
what
fun.
We definitely can do is get ahead of the game right now by making you help me answer some emails right this second. We're going to the question bucket,
yeah.
baby.
Yeah.
No, we're going to answer your email inbox.
Yeah, that's
help
right.
I'm going to answer that. What's the first thing you got in your inbox?
You
right
know,
now,
Rick has his privileges, I guess. Austin's
Mike Guyver just messaged
this.
Me and said, I should be around. Message me beforehand, though. If Skype, I'm at, and then I'm not going to say what his Skype name is because we don't believe in doxing.
That's not nice.
It's not nice.
That's what differentiates us from other publications.
That's right.
Anti-doxing.
True news only, no doxing.
Yep.
Yep. The one before that is, great, want to drop me a line when you guys finish the podcast? Don't want to disturb. I'm going to thanks Dylan. Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan.
That's cool.
Dylan's a rad
probably like
4:30
question marks. And I'm going to hit send on this for real. Danielle, confirm I'm hitting send.
Yep, he's hitting send
oh,
for
boom.
Real.
Stop that. Thank
that
you
really
for
happened.
Collaborating. Next email. Okay, great. Put the flat files for all the cards in the Google Drive GFX production folder.
Good.
Let me know if you're missing anything. I'm not going to reply to that email. Someone else has that all
somebody
locked.
Else, yeah, somebody
Damn.
Else's problem.
Four
it's
other
good.
People. Next email. This is about a thing I want to write later, so I'm not. I'm going to close this one and go to real emails to the question bucket. What I'm going to do is actually, we're going to go back to some of the old questions,
yeah.
and we're going to come forward to the new ones. Danielle, you're looking bright and
yes.
clear-eyed into
yes.
the future, and so I'm going to let you handle the new questions.
That sounds good.
I am, like I said, far back on my work, so I'm going to go to the bottom of the bucket.
Got to dig the bottom of that bucket.
Those questions
on the bottom.
This
there.
Is the first email we ever got to the question bucket. I'm going to start there, and we're going to work our way forward.
Bucket beginnings.
That's
true origin story right
bucket
here.
Bucket beginnings is... Is it the first movie in the series, or is it a relaunch, or is this like a
prequel? Yeah, Bucket Beginnings sounds like something
yeah.
that comes like, it's the sixth movie. It's like the Rogue yeah. One.
It's like 10 years later.
It's right,
yes.
exactly. All right, this comes in from Ben, who says, the Vita and the 3DS are both heading towards the ends of their lifespans. Mobile games are so dominant here among young adults and teens. This is an email I've already read, isn't it?
I don't think it's during my tenure.
Patrick, we already answered this email.
How do you know that?
Because the next bit is about how he's in Japan, and when he's in Japan, people all around him play games on their subway, but they're thought of as childish. Our portable games are childish. We start talking about iPads. We did this question already.
Maybe this was
I didn't remove it from the bucket. I fucked up.
It's okay, my friend.
John from Virginia, by way of England.
Thank you.
Says, hi, Austin and Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
I've been playing Darkest Dungeon this week. And Danielle, but again, way
before.
Yeah,
this is before my time.
This
I
was,
understand.
This before your time's before. Danica's time.
There were no Dans at Waypoint at that point.
Zero Dans.
Oh, it's very sad.
We're a two-Dan company. That's as high as it's going to get,
probably. Duo Dans. Yep.
Hi, Austin and Patrick. I've been playing Darkest Dungeon this week on Vita, and while the control scheme has taken some getting used to, I'm loving the Lovecraftian-inspired mythos and aesthetic of the game. Wayne June's voice acting is a huge plus. I'm actually playing that again right now.
Oh, nice.
I'm in, like, my own head, the deliberations of end-of-year stuff. I'm like, oh, Darkest Dungeon officially came out this year. Is that something I might put on my list? I need to revisit it. And like John from Virginia by way of England, I think the controls are a little rough. Anyway, John continues, any myths, traditions, or religions you'd like to see explored in a game? Any other Lovecraft-inspired games you know of? Really happy that you two et al. Are working together on the new site. Looking forward to seeing it grow. Best, John. Thanks, John.
I want to see more games about Egyptian mythology.
Okay.
Because I think they have some, you
some
know,
dope
there's some
mythology.
Really interesting characters and really interesting stories. And I've been getting into mythology in the last year. I started listening to the Myths and Legends podcast, which is very fun. That's always been, you know, it's always been sort of window dressing in many games. You know, there are, you know, in like platformers and things like that, there's always been, oh, look, there's hieroglyphics.
Right,
it's a,
right.
you know, but the actual mythology. The
enemies have jackal heads.
Right.
Close
it's,
enough.
It's like, oh, good, that's Egyptian. It's like, no, I want to actually hear some of the really in-depth, you know, stories there.
How about you, Patrick?
I don't know, I'm not sure I can think of any particular sort of mythologies, but like I often, one of my favorite parts of the Assassin's Creed franchise is just it uses stabbing dudes as a premise for doing AAA budgets for depictions of environments that you probably couldn't get away with in any other style of game.
Yeah.
So like I, part of the reason I have really enjoyed those games is like a chance to like, yeah, like to explore cultures and parts of the world vividly rendered in a way that they can justify doing because you're stabbing dudes. But like I wish there were games that explored like different parts of time, different cultures. But I do, my main thing to do was not stab dudes and find weird mythology objects and assassins. Like I'd love a game that was as beautifully rendered as Assassin's Creed. In those different parts of time in which my interaction, my verbs with the world were slightly different. And maybe we're getting to that point where, you know, it's just like technology is catching up and smaller teams can do things. But I would, that time still feels a little bit far off, but I wish there were games that were set in those sites of time periods that are not common in video games. But my reason for being there was, you know, not necessarily just exploring, but like something that wasn't just, you know, going around and stabbing dudes in the neck, which is fine. I like stabbing dudes in the neck. I'm not trying to dudes in the neck. I'm still pro stabbing
dudes. It's good to stab a dude in the neck.
Pro stab. Yeah. Pro stab at waypoint.
I think the thing for me there is like with the parallel, or I'm going to build off your thing of like, oh, the Assassin's Creed games let you go to these different time periods. The thing, there's a lot of obvious influence from things like Dan Brown and Umberto Eco. Obviously, there's a lot of influence from one of those things to the other thing anyway.
Yeah.
A lot of biting on Brown's part from Eco. But the thing I would have loved games to get into is the stuff that is in those books of like, oh, faith and culture and history are contested spaces. You know, Assassin's Creed does that narratively of just like, oh, the Templars and the Assassins are fighting over whose version of history the world sees, right? If we get this magic object, then we can change people's minds about XYZ. But I would love the game – this is the person I am. It's like I would love the game where like I'm looking at different documents from different sects of medieval Christianity and like seeing them bicker and debate over interpretation of dogma and interpretation of – like, that's the person I am.
Yeah.
And in general, I want that to be the thing about games, that how games take culture and history and religion into themselves. Every now and then, someone does this, and it's like, God, I'm trying to think of what – oh, it was the thing that I loved in the new Odin Sphere remake. The whole game is a frame story presented to you in these, like, storybooks, and in the remake in those – in those storybooks, you would get bits and pieces of the narrative that would be like handled to you straight, like, oh, the princess did this, 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 and this, and her father, blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes at the end, you would pull out another piece of paper that was like a bookmark or like a note left in the book. And that would be a note from an academic or from whoever owned the book last that was like, of course, this represent, you know, this position reflects that the author was biased towards such and such a thing. I love that sort of extra layer of texture over game narratives. It reminds you that history is written by humans and that it's debated and all that stuff. So more of that. In terms of the second little mini question there, any other games inspired by Lovecraft, like a billion. There's a billion Lovecraftian games, but I do want to shout out Call of Cthulhu Dark Corners of the Earth, which was the first-person shooter from, like...
Is that the Bethesda game?
I think that was the Bethesda game. It was from
published by Bethesda. They didn't make it, I don't think. Yeah, I've heard that that I've always wanted to go back and play that game because it's always been recommended to me as, like, an interesting horror game, but that it's like incredibly broken and hard to play.
It's incredibly broken, and I think at a certain point it kind of devolves into a kind of a shitty shooter, and it's kind of like you become a little too powerful, and it's about just shooting fish people because it's an Innsmouth game. But the opening like act is really strong. The opening like first 4 hours, which is like you get to Innsmouth, everything is clearly fucked up. You're not here to kill people. And then it just kind of goes off the rails, but that opening like 4 hours or so is still really strong and cool of just like, this place is messed up, but like, I'm just going to go get a hotel room, I guess, and be weirded out. And then like, there's one fantastic sequence early on of like, you have to go to bed. And if you go to bed, like the fish people are going to come for you in the night because they know that you're snooping around. But you have time to prep the room for that to happen if you're suspicious. And the NPC with you, I might be misremembering this completely. It's just like, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm locking the door and moving the cabinet in front of the door to keep it from keep people from coming in. And like, I love that little bit of automatic payoff. That was really good.
There's a game called Eldritch that I really like.
Eldritch is really good.
It's pretty rad. It's like Minecrafty looking. It's more of a roguelike, but it's sort of set in that general universe
by one of the two
David
brothers,
Pittman?
The Pittman, yeah,
that's
Pittman
it.
Brothers. They have a company that yes, it's a really fast.
Yeah,
not. I almost like comparing it to Spelunky, despite the fact that it's
totally
3D,
yeah,
and that it's about going on runs and like, okay, what weapon did I get? What item did I get this time? It's really cool.
Yeah, it's pretty grand.
It doesn't. For me, the thing with that game is like it takes the. I like that game in spite of the Lovecraftian mythos stuff
sure,
in it.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of a layer on top. It doesn't actually, like...
It doesn't really dive deep into the mythology.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Step one, fuck Lovecraft for being a huge racist. Step two...
Agreed, yes.
If you're going to adapt, like, the cosmic horror style, the stuff that I really love from it is the, like... The best analogy I've ever read for Lovecraft's horror is from a friend of mine who used to run the Call of Cthulhu tabletop role-playing game for me.
Okay.
And he said that, like, facing a Lovecraftian, like... enemy, facing a monster from the Lovecraftian mythos, facing Cthulhu, is like learning that a round peg fits in a square hole. And that is,
yeah,
like, it should shake you in a way that's like, oh, I can't trust anything. Everything is broken. You know, like, this thing is so massive and so strange and so, like, non-Euclidean and all that stuff. That's stuff that I really like from,
yeah,
from cosmic horror, and I love the sort of, like, oh, you're a small person in a world that's huge and hates you. Or is ambivalent to you, doesn't even notice you. So I like that more than, like, oh, that one has Cthulhu face. Like,
right.
Look at that Cthulhu monster.
Yes. The fish people
the
kind
fish
of thing.
Fish people, right.
Yeah.
Fish people are okay. I'm pro fish people. Make more games.
There's Zoras in Zelda. Yeah. They're all right. They're nice.
They're nice in Zelda.
Just saying.
Clockwork Empire has fish people. Also.
Nice fish people?
No. No. Not in my experience.
They're not nice fish people.
If you're into Cthulhu Mythos, you should watch the movie From Beyond by Stuart Gordon.
There you go.
Great, great horror film with Cthulhu stuff.
What's the one that I like that a lot by Carpenter? What's the Carpenter movie that's like, what if Stephen King was also fighting Cthulhu? Not fighting.
Oh.
Was like, went to Innsmouth, basically. Mouth of Madness in the Mouth
yes.
of Madness is like also Lovecraft adjacent, and I like in the
supposedly
Mouth of
also
a
good
lot.
Video game. I've never played the adventure game.
Wait, is it there's an adventure? There's an In the Mouth of Madness adventure game?
What?
That's wild. Okay, Danielle, you want to give us a hot new question from the top
right.
of the bucket?
This is from the top of the bucket. It lasts 16 hours, in fact. And this one, do we say last names?
No, not unless they say it's cool to say my last right. name.
It's Ryan. Ryan writes, hey all, sorry if this is long, couldn't find the time to make it shorter. Very nice reference right there.
There
like
go.
That. I am in a weird place. I was raised off of video games for better or worse, spending tremendous amounts of time perfecting my SNES Aladdin run or fully exploring the worlds of Final Fantasy VIII, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, or Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura.
You got it.
Good. Video games have always been my passion and my retreat, excuse me, from the world and my stresses. Then I had kids, a career, marriage, not in the typical order, but they came. I spent 5 years playing a very few select games, to give you an idea. Someone who played Mass Effect 1 and 2 in depth, but didn't even play for a second. The third one, which I discovered might not have been such a huge loss.
So, right. Right. Yeah, I like the third one.
I like it. Yeah, story, man.
Anyway.
Now my kids are older and enjoy games themselves. I have more free time and disposable income. However, every game I pick up, I fail to connect with. This year alone, I bought Stellaris, Darkest Dungeon, Dark Souls 3, Divinity Original Sin 2, Cities Skylines, Dragon Age Inquisition, and a few others. Some of these games I couldn't even bring myself to finish for a reason I can't even find words for. Soul series are my favorite games, and I finished Dark Souls 3 once, and now I can't find the interest to play at all. In the last podcast, Austin talked about getting through 5 horrid hours of Final Fantasy XV. Patrick joked about how the 13th chapter will make you question life choices. I feel like I'm in the 13th chapter of my video gaming life. Have any of you ever felt this way? I say with certainty that it was in part from my age. In my life now, I can't stand to have my hand held and drip-fed, as many games do, so it's hard to get through the start of some games. I can't stand to see the same dumb mechanics or mistakes made. I hate having my time wasted, like I felt in Dragon Age Inquisition. Too long. Have any of you ever lost your passion for games or aspects of gaming? Is something you power through or reconnected with?
It's the movie or the game I was thinking of was I Have a
Different
Game.
Screen,
different game.
Which is actually
that game's cool.
Not,
I like that game. It's dark.
Yeah. It's interesting that. this letter comes a couple of days after Jeremy Parrish, who longtime games writer, critic, historian. Like, there are probably precious few people write about games that can actually give the term historian, and Jeremy Parrish is probably one of them. Who has been the editor-in-chief at U.S. Gamer for a number of years. He wrote it 1UP. Like, if you followed games writing for the last 10, 15 years, you almost assuredly know or at least have read Jeremy Parrish's work. And he recently stepped down as the AC. And one of the reasons he cited that, like, I want to pull this from this paragraph here. He says, says, I confess I find myself somewhat alienated by the current direction of the games industry, unconvinced by incremental hardware upgrades, unenthused by the VR boondoggle, unexcited by rigid AAA game design formulas mandated by the need to recoup hefty development investments. It's not impossible for someone to run an interesting site centered around covering those matters from an outsider adversarial perspective by being an aggressive cynic, but that's not really my thing. I gave up on cynicism for its own sake a long time ago, and I know too well how hard game creators work, even if they're constrained by the system, to take any delight in trashing their efforts. There's far too much negativity and hatred in our current social climate, both in games and otherwise, and I don't want to contribute to it, nor do I think anyone at US Gamer does either. I think it's kind of interesting to like recognize this idea of like the way, like, you know, obviously Jeremy's coming at this from a very different perspective, but like it rang similarly true of like where you feel... and I'm sure we all feel this way sometimes where it's like everything that's happening in games like doesn't appeal to you for whatever reason, and it kind of like drives you up a wall and it makes you wonder like, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with games? And so I thought it was a fascinating parallel that like Jeremy, like in some, you know, there's a lot more going on with why he was leaving, but like recognize that he just isn't a big fan of like the games people want to talk about right now. And so that made him a weird choice to be in charge of a site that in some way should probably talk about games that people want to talk about. And so it sounds like Jeremy in some ways is going something through something similar to
totally. I feel like that's not all that uncommon. I feel like there's two things. Like, first is like, oh yeah, you get older, your priorities change, etc. But I don't know that I want to dismiss this person's emails like another one of those, because it sounds like he's already gone through the stage of like, oh, I have newborns. I have, you know, I'm settling down a little bit. Like, I have other priorities. That part he settled down with, and it sounds like was still playing games during that period. Now his children are older, and now he's finding like, eh, I'm not – they're just not connecting. I don't know that that's a bad thing necessarily. It's – I get the frustration. I've been there for sure of just like – ugh, it feels like nothing happening right now is exciting to me. I even think about a year like this where I've loved a lot of games that came out this year on paper. Like, push come to shove, I'll say like, oh man, these are some of my favorite games. Like, I think this year is filled with amazing games, great games. But I can't be pushed to like defend any of them the way I defended Invisible Ink last year. Or like, I can't – nothing moved me this year despite me stepping back and saying, oh yeah, I think Overwatch is a brilliantly designed multiplayer shooter. Oh, I, you know, I think such and such. Like, I have all of those things like intellectually, but I'm not feeling them. And that is – one of those things that's like, okay, I think I have to – I take a step back at that moment and say, is this a down cycle? Like, or is this like a more permanent thing? And or is it reflecting something in the industry, as Jeremy was saying, where there's a disconnect between my taste and the industry? For me, I think I'm just in a down cycle. It's been a very busy year. I haven't had time to like let something really soak in. But I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that evaluation and saying, okay, I'm going to really limit what – my game intake is and find something else to fill my spare time with that I really do love, like get into writing, get into reading, get into movies or music, experiment with other stuff, do crafts, pick up a sport. Like, all of that stuff is none of those things, despite the fact that I'm like dedicated to building a really great website about games that is shouting from the rooftops about the coolest things happening in games culture, I don't think games are any more valuable than any artistic or entertainment medium. I'm not here to have that fucking argument. It's a boring argument that people who are deeply unconfident in the medium make. I was reading an academic essay years ago about television, and it started by saying, as we all know, television is the most postmodern of media. And it was like, you added that to get like a nod from a publisher somewhere, so that this piece, that it wasn't a piece, it was an academic article. So this journal about postmodernism would like publish this piece, and it's like, you don't need that shit. Like, make the case you want to make without having it to, without resorting to the our games art thing, right? So for me, like, if that's your situation, right now you feel like, oh, I'm down on games right now, take a step back. It's cool to do that. It's totally fine. Like, the games will be here for you. If you ever want to come back and play something you loved, you can totally do that. Or if you get that, like, oh man, you know, Miyazaki is making a new game in whatever comes after the Soul series, and you're curious about it, give it a try. And if you bounce off of it, it's that's a bummer, but like it's not, you shouldn't feel less of yourself because of that.
I often find times like that where I'm not connecting is also a good time to reevaluate the games you're playing.
Yeah.
Like if you do just want to play games and you're frustrated by the games you have been playing that aren't connecting, like maybe that's an opportunity to like reevaluate, like what are genres
totally.
And franchises that I've written off? Like maybe this is an opportunity to like, you know, like for me, it's like, you know, like I've never played a Civ game. Like the next time I run into a rut, it's like maybe that's the time to like try that. And like, so maybe it's also a good time to like expand your horizons and like realize there are lots of other games out there that you probably never even consider playing because you've written them off or had a bad experience with them in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's super worthwhile. I know the thing that brought me back when I was having a super dry spell, when I played like maybe one or two big games and then otherwise just played like puzzle games on my 3DS. Or DS, actually, because this is like 2012 or so, I started learning how to make games, and that actually made me really passionate again about games, because I look at them in a sort of a little bit of a new way. I obviously am not like any kind of AAA developer, just like learning a little bit, and it's actually incredibly easy if you have a computer at all. You can do something like, not even Unity, I mean, you can even dive in on something like Game Salad or something
right.
super super sort of light and get at what makes these things. That's what made me feel like, oh, this is magic. Like even knowing the way it works is actually really interesting and fun for me,
right.
So that helped me actually be like, oh no, these are awesome. Like even when they kind of suck, like it's
totally.
There's magic here.
Like, yeah,
you know?
It's like the opposite solution, right? Which is instead of taking a step back, take a step forward and say like, you know, why is it that I like the games that I like?
Yeah.
What makes them tick? How does someone make a design decision? How does someone make a balance change? And like digging into that stuff could spark the interest, because you won't just be playing it in this kind of passive position. You'll be playing it in this really inquisitive way about like, oh wow, this level design is really interesting, or like and why it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like all that. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good question. I'm going to go to the next question over here. I have no idea if it's good or bad. I haven't seen it.
Just
this
digging
is,
in.
This comes in from Mike, who writes, really enjoyed the first podcast. You have a fan. Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
Just wondering what your take on the whole concept of the mid-generation console refresh we are seeing this time around is. Do you think this is a good step forward or a kick in the teeth to people who supported the console at launch? While it's not unusual to have multiple refreshes of hardware during a cycle, it is strange to see a sudden focus on 4K console gaming, albeit with an upscaler, when there are a few games hitting the magic 1080p 60 frames per second number as it is, or even 30 frames per second for that matter. The cynic in me would say that the TV industry needs to shift 4K sets as almost none of the manufacturers are making high-end 1080p sets anymore, Sony being one of them. And a 4K-capable console is a good incentive to do that. What do you think?
I never want to buy another piece of technology again, so I'm like the worst person to ask about this. I
so
genuinely
why?
Want the one console future.
Right.
Like, truly. I want one device that I can like beam onto a screen that's like on my wrist or something,
yeah.
and I can do all the things from there. So I'm awful. Don't ask me
but
this
that
question.
Mean, for you, I guess that's my question. It's like, do you see these steps of like, okay, consoles are becoming more like PCs
sure.
and that they're getting updates more often. This is, I'm being very speculative here. Who knows what this means for the future? But if that were the case, is that a step towards the one console future?
I don't know that it is.
Okay.
I hope it is. I'm just like a Luddite at this point in these terms. Like I love my technology. I love my toys, but I just... The entire business of consumer electronics is something that frustrates me ever further, especially as we go through the kind of economic frustrations and political frustrations that come along with that, with
sure.
having the shiniest new toy. So I am further and further becoming just a dirty hippie who hates
nice.
Buying new stuff.
It's good to know. It's good to have, you know.
I'm glad I'm at a gaming website,
yeah.
right? That's
hey,
good. I fit right
people
in.
People say that I only hire the same type of people. That's clearly not the case. Patrick, how about you?
I'm with you on like the appeal of the one console future, in the sense that like if you look at like the Xbox versus the PlayStation, but I also appreciate that we live in a world where like the Switch exists, and
sure,
I think companies
sure.
like Nintendo that are genuinely doing things differently with hardware, thinking of hardware not as just another box with their exclusive set of games, but like a box that approaches the concept of games and how you play them differently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that like companies like that exist. I'm with you that if I could just merge my PlayStation and my Xbox in one device, like that would change very little, you know, about how I play those games.
Yeah.
As for like what actually like happens with the mid-generation refreshes, like I don't think these manufacturers know either. Like everything I know about Microsoft's incentives, everything I know about Sony's incentives for having done this are largely driven by the fact that technology is not advancing at the pace that it used to, and that what drove the creation of the Pro, what's driving the Scorpio, you know, the Scorpio is a little more complicated because it's essentially, in some ways, it's the fact that technology and advancements are slowing down. In some ways, it's Microsoft forcing a reset of this generation so they can kind of pivot. But if you take that part out of it, and look at it more as like a broader trend, it's the fact that like the difference between the PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, while yes, those games look better, like isn't the gap from the PlayStation 1 to the PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 2 to the PlayStation 3. And that is just going to continue to be the case until we are proven otherwise. Like games will continue to look better, but those giant leaps that allow people to justify spending hundreds of dollars on a new device are disappearing. And so but there is that section of the populace that if you hand them the slightly faster, slightly shinier version, they're going to be excited to get that. And so Sony is essentially saying, well, we're going to have our cake and eat it too, where we can sell a new console to some section of the audience while maintaining the previous, the current generation and not quite fully moving on in the way the cycles have worked in the past. So I don't know that necessarily the Pro and the Scorpio like indicate that's what's going to happen.
Right.
But I also wouldn't be surprised if that – I see. I don't expect there to be like annual refreshes. Like that – I don't think video games are ever going to get to quite to that point.
To phone.
Yeah.
Phone but like this, model. The idea of like something every 3-4 years and then actual generational transitions are like 8 years, 9 years, like that's not, you know, super shocking to me. And you know, I think it was super little frustrating with like a game like The Last Guardian that runs at an atrocious frame rate. Like sometimes,
do you have a regular PS4?
I have no interest in buying a Pro. Yeah. Like,
but and The Last Guardian is just impossible for you.
It's not impossible. It's just like I'm someone that played on a console for a very, very long time. I got into PC gaming. Literally by accident, where I was fortunate enough that like a Giant Bomb fan that heard me complaining about the fact that I just really didn't have the extra funds to build a PC took extra parts and then shipped me a fucking PC. And it's I'm incredibly grateful because it's allowed me to engage in PC gaming since. But by playing on consoles, like I got used to low frame rates. Like it never bothered me, and so but then PC gaming kind of spoiled me because now now I'm used to it a little bit.
Right
in a way.
There with you. Yeah.
But like with Last Guardians, like that game had basically unplayable frame rates at certain points on the regular PlayStation. But on the PlayStation Pro, if you do like these weird set of tricks, you can like force it to like downsample to 1080p and get it to run at like a snappy 30 frames a second.
That sounds, I should do that because even on the PS4 Pro by default, it's still really framey.
Yeah, I will send you a link to like a weird of tricks that you have to do in your settings menu and it's bizarre. God. So that's a little frustrating, but I don't know. Like, I just don't, I guess the long short is like, it doesn't bother me too much. Like, I don't feel a real desire to.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Have a Pro. Maybe that's on Sony because I don't think they made a real interesting pitch on why I should get it. Like if their pitch was, hey, you know, play games at 1080 60 frames a second, like I would have bought a Pro. Like I would have bought a Pro if like there was a guarantee that those games
it would have needed to be a different thing if it was 1080p, if they were guaranteeing 1080p 60, right? Like as it is, I don't know that hardware can guarantee that for a lot of games.
Right.
So it would have been an even more expensive product that would have been an even harder sell.
Yeah.
So, tough. I don't know. I'm curious to see how it shakes out is kind of where I'm at with these things. Like,
also, fuck 4K. Who cares about 4K?
No one.
Exactly.
No one.
Really,
not no one.
Sorry.
But not a lot of people.
Like, I'm not dismissing that 4K looks beautiful and would be great, but it's just like, I don't know.
The other day, the editor-in-chief of Vice.com, Jonathan Smith, shout out to Jonathan Smith, came over to the desk and was like, yo, I'm thinking of buying a console. It's the first one I will have had since like the PS2 or maybe the Xbox 360 or something, right? Like hasn't played a game in 8 years. And I'm not sure, should I get the PS4 or the PS4 Pro? Like, I'm like, what are the prices? I didn't realize the PS4 regular, that there are deals right now that are like $2.99 with a game. And it's like, yeah. Oh, wow, that's a great, that's a pretty
bad,
solid
yeah.
deal.
Yeah.
And so we went back and forth over it. I was like, do you ever have an intention to get a 4K TV? Do you have an intention to do PSVR ever? Like, here are the places where I think maybe you should consider it. But at the end of the conversation, I was like, man, just get the PS4. It's fine. And then, like, the next day I got an email with a picture of him, his partner, and their dog all wearing a Skyrim mask helmet thing. And he was like, thanks for the advice, dude. It rules. It's like, all right, that's normal people. It's going to be fine.
That's
people
right.
Like, this isn't what they do day in and day out, where it's not their only hobby, where they what they want to do is, like, play a game sometimes. The same way, like, you or I want to go to a movie sometimes.
Right.
The regular PS4 is going to do fine for them. I'm curious to see how the Scorpio is, because, like, on numbers alone, the Scorpio looks like a much bigger jump. And so I'm curious if that's actually reflected in the hardware, like, in the games that will be coming out for it. So we'll see.
Yeah. We will see in the future.
You got a new question over there?
I have a new question.
Awesome.
I'm going to read about half this email because otherwise I don't.
Yeah, I cut them all the time.
Thank you for the praise,
gotta,
Ross. But
gotta edit.
But, you know. Ross writes into us, question I have is this. Do you think that the recurring subject on the show of having a large backlog of games, not finishing games, and games being overly long has to do with a fear of death? I'm just letting a pregnant pause go there.
Yeah, I got it.
This may seem unrelated, but hear me out. While your responsibilities as game journalists may make this more severe, I don't think this is an issue specific to professionals. Games satisfy a human desire to escape the constant reminders in daily life that our time here on Earth is finite. In a game that we can enjoy the illusion of exploring a world endlessly until we have seen all it has to offer, even returning from death to press onward. It's tempting to apply the same logic to the consumption of games, making it an even more pleasurable meta escape. Just look at my Steam library. Endings are hard because it's a reminder that we are mortal. Our lives will inevitably end with a backlog of games we never got to play and experiences we never got to have.
Yeah, like every game in my Steam library is like an entry in my bucket list, right? Like,
it's true.
It's a promise I'm making myself of future free time. It's like, ah, yeah, I'm going to buy this because I know that at some point it's a thing I'd really like. In the same way that, like, I can't quite – that it was hard. So last night I finally advanced into Altissa, which is it's not like I'm on the final stretch of Final Fantasy 15, but it gave me the notice of, like, hey, heads up, you won't be in the open world for a little while.
Oh, yes.
And it – took some doing to get myself in the place where it's like, I have a quest log filled with stuff I haven't done. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to move forward and just get through this. And I think it's the same thing whenever I have to, when I finally decide, like, okay, I'm not going to play X. Like, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to move on with my life, which is not going to happen this year. Like, last year that was with Call of Duty Black Ops 3, which was like a game that had been kind of not panned, but had not received universal critical acclaim the way many of those games had. And I was still curious about it because of that. Because, like, there's some weird stuff
What's
in the story.
What's different
here? And then at some point I just have to make the decision, like, I'm not going to play this. I'm not going to buy it. I'm not going to play it. And it's okay. And I can see the mortality angle there, that, like, that's not a promise I wanted to make myself. There are other promises worth making. Like, I still really want to go to France.
Yes.
Right? Like, and so I'm
like,
not.
Like, you should play Doom.
Like, it's on the.
You should play Doom in Paris.
I should Doom in Paris, right? Exactly.
That's
actually
the new movie, Doom in Paris.
Right. That's actually the
really
MF
good.
Doom remix.
It's my favorite rap
in Paris.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Thank
right.
you.
And
I like that conceptual angle. The, like, you're harping on the things you wish you had time to do because we all know we don't have all that much time.
I really like it's funny. I don't do this as much with games, sort of consciously, but my favorite piece of entertainment in the universe, TV, games, movies, Farscape.
Uh-huh.
I still have not seen the finale of Farscape.
Danielle.
I've watched through it like four times,
Danielle.
And it's because of this. It's because I don't want it to end.
Danielle,
I don't want it to end.
You know how it ends?
I know exactly how it ends.
Okay.
One of the main characters dies, and I'm really sad about it, even though it's been years. The finale aired in like 2004. It's been like 12 years.
Death is rough.
It's hard, man.
Yeah.
Eventually, I will watch it, but I need to, like, at this point, I need to, like, build myself up for it. I need to get, like, tissues.
You need to rewatch it, like, three more times.
Three more times, and
then
get some tissues, like, get a blanket ready, have some, like, you know, my girlfriend holding my hand.
I got
you. Hey, I get attached to things.
That's fair. I almost want to defend this practice of, like, The takeaway for me shouldn't be that it's pathological to have to refer to your backlog so much as it's, like, deeply human and like, and that is in and of itself a coping mechanism for knowing our time is limited, yet both in the specific, like, oh, shit, I don't have enough time to play games, and also in the broader, like, oh, like, who knows? I kind of like there's an almost ritualistic quality of, like, oh, yeah, each game that I say I want to finish is, like, a little prayer that things will calm down and that I will have that time in my life.
Yeah.
That's not the worst thing we could be doing.
It's not bad.
You know. It's also just games are long. That's the other problem.
Yeah. Games are long and lives are complicated.
Yeah, we can talk about it talk about this for 10 minutes and then just go, yo, shit, games are long.
Yeah, The Witcher, I just don't have 110 hours for The Witcher right now. Huh.
It's true.
Short
you
question.
You can find 8 hours for Doom. You know,
I found two so far.
In Paris.
I'm like 2 hours into it.
Yeah. All right, okay.
I'm going to come back to it. I'm going to try to beat it on... next question from Alexander. I have to finish it before end of the year. My end of the year list comes out. I have to decide whether it's my thing or not. So, yeah. Or I could not, and then I don't have to put it on my list. My list is already really cramped.
There you go.
That's like the fear of it. That's the other side of this.
Fear of death.
Every
fear.
Game I don't.
Yeah, if you like it, then it's like your perpetual like 7 through 10
right.
that you mm-hmm. are just yelling at.
Exactly. And that's the thing. Like, it's the other reason I keep things in my backlog is like if I don't play it ever, I don't have to voice an opinion about it. You know, like I just don't have to deal with it anyway.
A lot of anxiety.
I don't want to reveal the specifics of it, but I got a text message from Giant Bomb's Vinny Caravella where he messaged me and he was like, hey. This game, it was pretty fucking good, right?
We had the same, I had a similar conversation with Vinny Caravella earlier that said,
I think it's the same game. I don't want to spoil it in case.
No, I'm not going to say what it is, but he's like, what is your feelings on blank? Yeah. I had to remind myself I put like 30 hours into that game.
Okay, I don't think it could have been that.
I think it's we'll a different game. I think it's a different so. Game. I think I know what game you were talking about. Yours is shorter.
If you put 30 hours into the game, I'm thinking of I know Vinny's a completionist, but come on, bro.
I think he may have pulled the game he talked to me about for the game he talked to you about.
Possibly. All right.
I literally think that happened. Anyway.
Well good. The podcast, after the game, Giant Bomb's Game of the Year, we will revisit this question.
We will, absolutely.
And Vinny's questions, yes.
good timing on this, because this one comes in from Alexander from Norway, who says, with Austin and Patrick having both been a Giant Bomb, what are you taking with you from your time there into the new site, and what do you want to do differently? Keep up the good work, Alexander from Norway. I know we've talked about this actually a couple of times, Patrick. Like, obviously we have this shared history at Giant Bomb.
Yeah.
We love those guys. We love what we did there.
Right.
We love what they continue to do there. But we also have had to say, like, all right, like, this can't be Giant Bomb 2, or we can't attempt to do that. Like, that's – you're setting yourself up for failure. And we don't have the same exact skill sets as, like, what that whole group of people does.
We would fail at being Giant Bomb 2.
The second you try to do that, you're setting yourself up for failure, right?
Like you and I are not, like, you know, Ryan and Jeff.
We're not
like,
Ryan
and
Jeff.
Are not, like, yeah, and that's I think what I took away was, like being honest and, like, feeling – like you're doing honest, interesting work that is true to yourself. Like that was my main takeaway of like my nearly 4 years there was like I know I'm good at my job. I'm going to make sure the jobs that I get going forward allow me to do shit that I'm proud of and that I feel good about. And I'm going to realize that I work within some certain constraints like that. That's the, you know, by not, you know, I'm not, you know, even Danny O'Dwyer, who's, you know, crowdsourced and, you know, doing his own thing, like, and is, quote unquote, removed from the system. Like, he has his own set of constraints. But, like, I think just trying to do your work honestly and being proud of the work that you do. And if you're not doing that, figuring out why you're not and try and work towards doing that. Because it's why Giant Bomb works. Like, Giant Bomb doesn't work because of, like, it's a bunch of dudes sitting on the couch. It's like, no.
No, there's
like,
a lot of people who are just a bunch of dudes sitting on the couch.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of people being honest about what the work they wanted to do and the things they like and speaking truthfully. And like that was my takeaway from my time.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what I want to bring forward from there too for me is that stuff. And just like, you know, a conversation I had a lot then would be like, hey, are we putting this trailer – hey, Alex, are you going to put that trailer up? And then it'd be like, well, why? Like why would we put that trailer up? Is anyone here excited by this trailer? And if someone's like, yeah, I really think it's really cool and exciting, like, oh, yeah, cool, awesome. Like let the things that we cover reflect who we are as individuals and more than that even, like be engaged with the things that we like and like try to figure out how to talk about the things that we like and the things that we don't like too in a way that is critical but also really entertaining. And that can be really tough to do. And for us, the other thing is just like if the three of us are being honest about who we are the end result is just not going to be the same thing as Giant Bomb, right? Like, it's going to be more long-depth written pieces. It's going to be video documentaries. Not that people like Vinny, you know, aren't, and Drew aren't capable of producing really great video documentaries, but, like, there's other stuff there. And that's the other thing for me is just, like, doing slightly different formatted stuff. Like, that's – I want to play with format in a way that we couldn't there, not for any negative reason, but because, like, the bread and butter of Giant Bomb is quick looks. The bread and butter of us so far is text articles, right? Like, they're just different interests. And so now that I have the time to do that other stuff and, like, curate that stuff and edit that stuff, I had time to edit one piece a week at Giant Bomb because we were busy doing other cool things. Here we can edit dozens of pieces every week. And that's really exciting, and you know, it's a different model. Not to say we're not doing streaming and video and stuff, but it's about finding a slightly different balance that reflects our strengths, you know?
I think the one other thing I would say is that this is not a constraint put on me, and I don't think for you at our time there, but it was more of a constraint of the audience. Was like, I found, especially at my time at Giant Bomb, like, my thinking shifted, my work became more political, and more of myself was in my work. And at no point in my time there did anyone there tell me to not speak my mind. I wrote whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. But the audience had different expectations.
Yep.
And so what was exciting about, even when I went to Kotaku, it's like I went to an audience with certain expectations. Like, what was exciting about coming to Waypoint was this idea of, like, this is the site we want to build. We're going to write the articles we want to write. Fuck the people who don't care about that. And we're going to build an audience that is interested in that.
Right.
So that we're not running into that audience issue of, like, well, the audience wants this, but the writers want to do this. And, like, we'll still have our tensions there.
Of course.
But, like, that happens with any audience. But, like, there was something I think, like, if you look at all the people that work here at Waypoint, like, there's a very sort of specific sort of philosophical mindset that is very similar, even if our opinions are different. You'll notice a lot of our work is political,
right,
and we have no problem sharing that. And so that's also part of what I took from Giant Bomb to here, was like, this is the kind of work I want to do now.
You figured,
like,
it out.
I need to find a place to do that where I can do that honestly, and that the audience is going to be excited about it.
Totally.
Like, you want the audience to appreciate the work you're doing and not be like, why don't don't do this, go do Y. And so I think that's one other point, too.
Totally. I've said many times, at least privately, that, like, I'm very glad you had your stint at Giant Bomb before I had mine. the audience changed when you were there, right? Like, the audience was forced to confront that stuff. I would not have survived at the previous set of the previous full, more full audience that had a lot of people who recoiled at the notion of talking politically about games. But, like, by the time I was finished, and again, like you, like, everyone was really encouraging that I would go down those rabbit holes. Like, I you know, Brad edited a lot of my reviews and, like, loved doing – I loved having Brad as an editor, and he, like, helped me be both political and like, more traditionally critical in those reviews to talk about games like Homefront. And, like, how am I supposed to write about Homefront without talking about America and politics? Like, and so that was really exciting to be around people like that. And you know, nothing but positive things to say. If you want if you want more of that, the stuff, I actually did an AMA recently on Reddit and answered to kind of, like, what did I learn from Giant Bomb? So check that out. Danielle, question from the top.
I got another question from the top.
Top of the bucket.
That's right.
Question from the top.
It's a good one. Mm-hmm. This comes from Oscar. Oscar from Melbourne, in fact. And Oscar writes, "Dear Digital Pyramid Heads."
It's us.
I like that. "I've just been listening to a certain podcast that Patrick was on back in 2012 where he talks about being unconvinced by Dark Souls." I know Patrick's been on something of a journey of discovery since then. But for Austin and Danielle...
Y'all have said bad things.
I used to say terrible things.
I bet I said some real stupid things.
But for Austin and Danielle, or whoever else might be on the podcast this week, do you have any games you've written off that you later came to love? And then there's a PS. I'm also curious whether Patrick still stands by Zombie U, or if either Patrick or Austin missed the shit fight over Game of the Year, but that's a separate thing.
I guess very sure that, yes, I missed the Game of the Year discussion of the Giant Bomb. Probably more than anything about being part of it.
Do you? Yeah.
Yes.
You dug digging it in there.
Like, you were really, so good at it.
You
were very good.
I love shredding people and disappointing people.
At the same time, God, I'll never get that hour about Fallout 4 back ever. I'll never get it back.
Oh, God.
To be there when Brad argued to get Destiny number 10 on that list
was
one of the more beautiful moments of my life. The incredulous Alex Navarro.
I think, weirdly, I think time has validated him.
Yeah, totally.
On that.
Totally. It was just, Yes, I missed that. Anyway,
2014 Destiny. Yeah.
Do you guys have an equivalent of like My Dark Souls, of like a game where like you actively said F this, and then at some point we're like, oh,
Normally it's stuff very close to release, where like something in the lead up to release, I'm like, man, fuck Call of Duty 4.
Yeah.
I'm fresh out of college. I was a few years out of college. Maybe it was like pretty much, I don't know, it was 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. 2007. So I was like, I'm young and I hate war. And like, I still do hate
nice,
war.
Good.
But
yeah.
Like,
now
but,
you're just like, I'm in my 30s and I hate war.
And I hate war, exactly. But I kind of dismissed it as like, and I played Call of Duty 2 and thought it was pretty okay, you know, but like, I didn't suspect that that would be a game that did anything with war, right? I thought it would be a game in which you were a soldier, not a game in which war was a topic. And I think it ended up, 4 especially, ended up with being the latter, that had like a very specific perspective on war that was touching at least on notions of mechanized warfare and war at a distance. I always go back to there's a pair of levels, one in which you're in an AC-10 gunship and one in which you're like on the ground, like completely surrounded by people and just like it's muddy and gross and violent and scary. And like that juxtaposition was really smart and clever. And like, again, at that point, it was just like, Call of Duty 4, whatever. And then what happened was I came home from the holidays and I was the only one in my apartment, and my roommate had Call of Duty for a while. And I had been like watching him play multiplayer and like rolling my eyes. And I was like, fine, I'll play it. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But that was like a very quick turn. There's nothing I held in my heart as bad for years, or like disinterested, or I don't think. I'm pretty open.
I have not gone on anything close to the journey you have, Patrick, but I was definitely fuck Dark Souls, mm-hmm. fuck it forever. Mm-hmm. I could, and not
the
that I thought it was
sucks.
Like, not
I
that
know,
I thought it was shitty.
Great, but parts of the fan base are really shitty.
Like, and get like, good attitude. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to go to a boxing ring and get good. Thank you very much. Like, I'm sorry, but I have other skills.
Dark Souls Reddit.
Sorry, but
down
it's
on the block.
She'll go.
I'm just like, I hate that attitude. Like, I genuinely hate that attitude. Like, well, I think it sucks and it's like, not fun.
Oh, that
and,
must reflect something about the way the game functions.
Yes.
And in fact, I don't think it does. I've said this a lot, that I think Dark Souls is actually like, it's not a, I think Dark Souls has a lot of ways built into it to make it a lot easier, and it's built for collaboration and community play, and those things are actually really positive and rad. And sometimes the community dresses up in a sort of machismo badass like that it doesn't need to do necessarily.
Yeah, it just really turned me off.
It has a thing built into it where you're like, man, this boss is hard, come help me. That's like built into the
game.
That's
cool. Yeah, and that's a really, really cool feature. And I actually really like the weird things about those games. I love the world building. I love the sort of exploration and the quiet moments of those games. I'm still not, I wouldn't call myself like a Souls fan. I played like 60 hours of 3. I did fall off it at some point.
Hours.
60 hours is a lot of hours.
But I put a lot in. I got through Bloodborne. I loved Bloodborne. So I feel like I went from being like, it's never going to be for me, ever, ever, ever. I don't want, you know, like I respect the design. I respect the sort of purity of the design, but I am not going to be a fan of this series, to being like, I see the appeal here. I can enjoy at least some of this. So I went on a partial journey.
I wasn't familiar with the fandom that much as I was judging the people who enjoyed Dark Souls. I was like, you masochistic weirdos! Like, what is this?
Damn!
That's probably why my comments from back then, from what I remember, that was part of it. Was just like, who the fuck would want to play this? And the people who play this are weirdos.
Right.
Like,
right. And now
I'm that weirdo.
Now you're a weirdo. Right. Yeah.
And now, like, in your whatever Patrick is writing thing, I've had an essay I needed to edit for a potential video feature from you for months.
There.
That is just like about the joy of learning from dying in Dark Souls. Yeah. So, you know, times change. Yeah. Times change. I'm gonna dip a little bit deeper into the question bucket here. Let's see. I'm going to find a good one. I've got to find a good one because we're running out of time. I think we read that one before, too.
Okay.
I think we read that one before, too. I have to start cleaning out this bucket. This bucket has loose, lingering questions.
A lot of old stuff in that bucket.
Yeah.
A little rusty at the Rusty Bucket Bay. That's a level in Banjo-Kazooie.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
It sure is. Yeah. It's level 8.
That's
I knew
specific.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so this I think builds off of that last one here, which is this comes in from Andrew. So a big part of online gaming that has made or broken games for me is toxicity. Whether it's a teammate yelling at you for not playing the way they think the game should be played, or opponents BMing, bad manners-ering.
Good.
I didn't know that's how, I didn't know it was called BMing. it always seems to leave a bad taste in my mouth. Some games have solutions, Overwatch. Others are structured in a way that they almost promote negativity. League of Legends, this is their claim, not my claim. Do you think that there is a way to combat this in a way that still makes online competitive game experience feel right? Is this negativity perpetrated by perpetuated rather by some online people made easier by anonymity? I always dismiss the anonymity thing. Like, I think there was a time that was like the truism was like, oh, internet, you know, anonymity plus strangers equals
dick, yeah, or whatever.
And then right. Facebook and, like, comments showed up and then destroyed it for us. I thought that too. I totally subscribed to that belief.
Same.
Yeah, but it is not true.
No, it's super not true. So, I don't know. What do you think?
I think that people – there's been some good research on this. I know Catherine Cross has actually – she's a sociologist getting her PhD, and she's done some good looking into this, as I'm saying it all folksy. But that people are really empowered to think of others as less human online in their interactions online. Obviously, in this year, we're seeing – not just this year, but I feel like we're seeing plenty of this – in person as well, but it does seem that there's a strong correlation between feeling as if things that happen online are not the real world, and people who are online are not, you know, quote unquote, real people in the same way, and their feelings just don't matter as much. And you can be a certain way online because it's like a different persona, and there's an incredible, you know, thoughtlessness to that in like not treating other people like human beings just because they're on a screen and they're connected in a different fashion. I mean, that's my take. I also am like, you know, I have zero tolerance for toxicity. Like, I have plenty of tolerance for something that kind of errs on the side of like shit talk during a you know, multiplayer game or something. Like teasing among friends, I understand. But it feels like there is a very hard line when somebody's actually just actively being shitty and hurtful and mean and doesn't know where that line is, and I can't, like, it's zero tolerance. I'm out.
It's, you know, so hard sometimes to be like, I'm friends with this person, and also we want different things from this game. I mean, like, first of all, like, there's a degree of like toxicity or like being shitty that is should be 100% on, like,
yes,
pass the fucking line, chill out, calm the fuck down. I'm not gonna play anything with you. But there is also just like legitimate division between people I have in my life who want different things from competitive games or even non-competitive games. Like, I even think about something like MMOs, where there are sorts of players who want to play an MMO in a way where, like, they're doing raids and they're getting their rotations exactly right and blah blah blah. I lean towards that, but not all the way to where I'm like grumbling about other players necessarily. Right. And that's not even me shit talking people who grumble about other players. Like, I'm just, there are different types of people who want different types of things from games, and sometimes the people who I like want to talk about politics or movies with are not the same people who I want to play Overwatch with.
Yeah.
That, like, sometimes there are people who, and I'm not even talking about, this is true for all sorts of games for me. Like, oh, hey, you and I get together or get along really well, but I care more than you do about winning this match, or vice versa. You care more about me playing my position right, or about me keeping the buffs up, or about whatever it ends up being. Like, and that disconnect can be really tough to navigate. Even in the – I find it in the tabletop space a lot too. It's like a thing growing up. Like, oh, I really want to play D&D. I'm going to play it with my friends, even though this person has like a 12-page backstory on their character, and this person's name is like Fart MacGuffin. And like –
yep.
Those people want different things from this game, and you kind of have to find either find that common ground where it's like, okay,
Fart MacGuffin can talk to Gozier.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly. Yep. Gozier is also just
also
Fart Gozier, MacGuffin. Fart MacGuffin, yeah, you know, whatever your last name
was.
They're
kind of the same person. It's true.
And that's totally fine. Like, both of those are good ways to play games, but you just need to make sure that you have that, at least have that conversation about expectations, I think. That helps. If you're playing with regular people, if you're playing with people regularly in your life. Patrick, do you find any toxic stuff in your gameplay experiences?
I don't.
Or are you, like, done with multiplayer games? You got a baby.
I've never been super into multiplayer games, like, in post, like, sort of N64, or rather, like, post-college era, where it was just I played multiplayer because it was like incredibly convenient. So it just hasn't been a huge part of my life. But I wish more developers took it more seriously. I think I have enormous amount of respect for Riot Games and their openness and talking about looking at toxicity from an academic level, bringing in, you know, like psychological experts to like look at like things like how do you change, you know, like they're little things like how they you change the color, you know, from red to
UI, UX.
Yeah, like there's UI stuff that actually like triggers less aggression in players when they are playing competitive games. When, you know, like where League of Legends has pointed out where when someone gets banned, like rather than just the ban happening, it's like in a forum, the ban is listed and the specific thing they did with the quotes in context to point out why you were banned got people to often back down is interesting. And so I really appreciate like what Riot Games does. I think like Overwatch is a great example of a game trying to find UI fixes for toxicity or, you know, like just the way that people vote. For like players that have done like good work in a game but don't get necessarily recognized by the play of the game, like those are things that, like even if you didn't play that well, there are ways for players to like encourage better behavior.
Or you're going to be positive because you're getting positive reinforcement, which in turn blah blah blah. Even in Overwatch, like there isn't just a thing I can hit that can tell me how well the rest of my team is doing on an individual level. I'm not going to be yelling at Patrick because he's bad at. I can see, for instance, maybe that Patrick is not on the payload where he needs to be. But maybe it's anecdotal. Maybe Patrick can be, oh no, I was on the payload most of the time. You just weren't, it was just a different time.
You're just there at the wrong moment.
I was wrong there at the wrong moment. Yeah. I was doing my job, I promise. And like, okay, I trust you.
but it's like,
you know what else I trust?
Oh, go ahead. I was segueing to close.
So
I would say it's a little like with Overwatch, it's little things like not ranking people by KDR, right? Like, it's finding the different metrics for to measure players' contributions is like really important. And Overwatch is a great example of a game that says that part's not as important in terms of measuring contribution.
We'll find some other way to track. That way, you know how you are doing, but and can judge yourself in that way. You know, I really appreciate that. Do you know what else I appreciate?
What else do you appreciate?
I found a different seg. Oh. I appreciate the fact that you're going to go to our website and check out our end of year content.
Yeah!
Hashtag content. I also appreciate that you are going to come back on Friday and listen to our second podcast this week. We're going to talk about some of the categories. We're not really doing traditional award categories, but like I said, we are doing these clubs, and I feel like we need to determine like who is the team captain of the Waypoint High School paintball team.
Yes,
you know who is the club president of the Waypoint High School Horror Club. I don't know who that. We're going to find out and talk about the year in gaming and the year the kind of things that we've been doing over the last year, and just kind of talk a little bit about what's been going on. So make sure you tune in for that. I'm Austin Walker. You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter, Austin Walker Games on Facebook. Danielle, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter, Danielle R.I. and Danielle Riendo Writer on Facebook.
Perfect. Patrick.
Find me at Patrick on Twitter and P. Klopik on Facebook.
We're on Twitter?
Wherever you want.
He's just all over Twitter.
What is your bot? Find me. Is it Hot Scooperoonie or something like that?
Bot. I don't know. I'm gonna see if Patrick Klopik bot.
It must be.
I thought there was a Scooperoonie or something.
Scoopspot or something.
Scoopspot. Can't find it.
Mr. Scoops. Also, shout out to my favorite new bot on Twitter, at IceTSVU, in which it is IceT's character from SVU saying a bunch of procedurally generated lines mixed with screen caps. So things like, for instance, it's called Dutch Pies. Kids try it at parties. Next thing they know, they're on YouTube getting paid to square dance with anteaters. Or like Toxicology says she OD'd on some new narcotic called Dog Tingle. It's made from seaweed and toner. Best bot. Very good bot.
That's an excellent bot.
Okay, I found it. It's Scooperson.
Scooperson.
Good.
Under the Twitter name is Tricky Scooperson. I will read
please.
The most recent. Let's read a couple of them. Most recent one is Kotaku has revealed in an exclusive interview that pro WWE criminal story players were using Adderall in competition.
Oh, no.
Oh, crime time. How could you do this?
Where's Ice-T for this?
I don't know.
True SVU.
Atari are no longer under threat of hostile takeover after the runaway success of Rhythm Agents Fever.
Finally.
Man.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Perfect. Thanks, Atari. Oof. So you can find all that on Twitter. You can find a lot of things on Twitter, it turns out. You can find everything we do at on Twitter at twitter.com/waypoint, Facebook, www.facebook.com/waypointvice.
Good.
You can find all of our articles and all of our end-of-year stuff at waypoint.vice.com, waypoint.zone, bazinga.zone, digitalpyramids.com. There are probably more out there. Just keep typing stuff into your bar and see if you find another one that goes to Waypoint. You can just let us know.
Use us.
And then the other thing you can do is you can listen to our theme song, Miss You by Boen, by going to waypoint.zone/BOEN. And you should buy it because it's good. And it's playing right now. All right. I'm going to also thank Tim Barnes, who's the person who put that in there when I said
Tim.
Right now. Thank you, Tim. Tim is in the room. Tim really likes Rogue One. We talked about it for a while.
Tim is awesome and rad.
I hope everyone had a pretty good holiday weekend. I hope this week is really good. If you're traveling, be safe. If you're not traveling, be secure and love yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say. And the other thing I'm going to say is peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.